Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the book of Proverbs. We're in that familiar section of Proverbs chapter 6, verse 16, where the sage writes, "There are six things which the Lord hates, yea, seven which are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among the brethren." We've been looking at that in some expansive detail. We've already looked at haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. We'll go on now to look at the other four. But if there's ever a character matrix in which one does not want to find oneself, it is one of these, because to become enmeshed in any one of these abominations is to place ourselves directly in the bullseye of divine discipline. We were last talking about hands that shed innocent blood. Christians can sometimes find themselves drifting off course and getting out of alignment with the Spirit of God and with the paths of righteousness, and drift over into these detestable things indicated by haughty eyes, arrogance, pride. We can trivialize lying and become one characterized by a lying tongue. I doubt that many would find themselves described as among those who have hands that shed innocent blood. I would certainly hope not. Nevertheless, contemporary violence, as we were saying, reigns supreme. Here in Oregon some years ago, an estranged father blew away his wife and two small girls with a shotgun in the front yard. People like these get there by nursing their wounds like a dog licks a sore. They are usually bored, dissatisfied, unfulfilled, and are looking for somebody to blame for their misery and discontent and self-contempt. They often find someone who reminds them of what they would like to be and can't, or of someone whom they hold responsible for their woes, and they're quick to do a hatchet job upon them. One way or another, they kill people. They are hyenas. They are brigands and muggers in either the spiritual or physical sense. Some people do this, shed innocent blood in the spiritual or metaphorical sense. And there's where Christians can drift way off course. Then there's the rampant domestic violence, of which the interminable O.J. Simpson trial was our most ubiquitous reminder. Let me make another observation in this connection about hate. For the root of all of this is hate, and those who drift into a spirit of hate are in this circle that God detests. Hate not only puts violence within our moral reach, needing only a spark to set it off and launch us into the kind of people who appeared to be good, law-abiding citizens, clear across the vile boundaries into a feeding frenzy of mob violence. Remember the L.A. riots? But it can also make us indifferent to reason and to evidence, so that we emotionally side with killers rather than justice. I come finally to what I believe is the ultimate symbol of hypocrisy in the case of liberal America and its opposition to violence and bloodshed. I speak of the horror of abortion, which amounts to nothing more than convenience killing of the innocent. God abhors it. Let everyone take note. Hands that shed innocent blood. Nothing could be more clearly within the compass of that description than the violence of abortion. The only way anyone can justify abortion is to put on blinders of intellectual honesty and pretend that a fetus, which is clearly alive, and which could survive, especially with modern medical technology, were it outside the wall of the womb, but pretend that it is something less than human. Even at that point, we're terribly hypocritical, for many of those who promote abortion rights, so-called, so fiercely, sometimes even take violently, into the streets, protecting animals and trees. How can anybody justify such hypocrisy? They take exception to our protests against abortion, but they would have you thrown in jail and throw away the keys if we cut down trees or mistreated some animal. Somehow they have no problem with pulling a living baby apart from limb to limb with medical tools. This is the age of irrationality, people, the age of unreason. It's the age of rhetoric when people will not listen to the voice of reason but simply latch on to rhetoric that plays demagogically into winning their argument, no matter how badly it distorts the truth and the issues. Abortion, this convenience killing, which God hates, hands that shed innocent blood, is to my mind perhaps the most perverse symbol of cultural selfishness and indifference to the sacredness of human life. Let me talk about this rhetoric thing for just a minute. Again, I'm talking about putting a spin on the issue. That's a lying tongue. A spin that is designed to change the face of reality and carry the issue emotionally. In America, for example, freedom has been exalted to a sacred. So everybody wants to put their issue in terms of freedom and make it all about that. If we have smut or pornography or sex shops in your neighborhood, it becomes an issue of freedom and choice. It's a sacred. If they want, however, to deny your children the right to be exposed to the Bible in the school, they do so on the grounds of religious freedom, for others, not for you. It's the same deal with this abortion thing, hands that shed innocent blood. Are we to understand that in the hierarchy of human values, that the freedom of a mother to choose whatever she wants to do with her own body supersedes the freedom of a child to live? Is the right to make personal decisions a right so sacred that grants me the license to destroy a living being, to exercise that personal right? That is morally insane. But it's the age of rhetoric, not reason. Anybody can see that. To pretend that the issue is confined to the body of a woman is the height of intellectual duplicity and fraud. If a woman were carrying a baby in her arms and she wanted to jump into a fire, would we grant her that choice? Because she has the right to do with whatever she wants with her own body? No. In fact, even if she didn't have the baby attached to her, we would not give her that much license anyway. We'd try to stop her. To grant a mother the choice to destroy innocent life because it's inconvenient to her and her sexual habits, or inconvenient to her husband, represents gross and callous indifference to the sanctity of human life. There are six things which the Lord hates and seven which are an abomination to him. Let a nation be warned. Let everybody be warned. One of those among haughty eyes and a lying tongue. And there's a lot of lying in connection with this abortion business. Hands that shed innocent blood. And chief among those are those who wholesale slaughter infants. And it's not just the moms and not just the fathers of these fetuses that go along with it. It's the medical people who are complicit in it. Many of these same people will picket against the execution of a vicious criminal, and yet they have no compunction whatever about destroying a living fetus. How in the world can they justify that? Only by blindly, ignorantly, calling it a thing, not willing to define it as a life, which goes against all the evidence. How could rational people be so totally unreasonable and devoid of conscience? In hypocritical compassion for child welfare, they argue that it's better to abort, translate kill. There's one of those spin lies. There's one of those euphemistic lies. They argue that it's better to abort unwanted babies than bring them into a world unwanted. Of course, nobody has ever polled the millions of babies aborted on that premise, whether they would rather take their chances rather than be summarily executed for the safety of the mother, but cruel for the baby, by the technological wonders of modern medicine. Extend that perverse logic, and believe me, it won't be long until it's extended, perhaps to you in your old age. And what you will eventually have is a reasoning that says it's okay to do what many of the ancients did with their unwanted children. I mean, infants already born. Just trash them. Expose them to the elements and let nature do its cruelties on them. Oh, we'll probably do it more efficiently than that. But the logic will be the same. And we're already headed in that direction with the elderly. The other day, my wife went to a nursing home so-called in another city, and it was nothing but a rotting, stinking warehouse for the dying. No obvious care was being given to anybody. I can't say that for sure, but I say no obvious care was being given to anybody other than a place to lie down. According to her, it looked almost like what we could imagine in a concentration camp. Right now, it's let them die with dignity. Another lie. God hates haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. And then if these old people insist on hanging around and messing up my life, making things inconvenient and posing too much financial hardship, let's just take charge of the situation, and when they are no longer any good for themselves or others, let's hasten their exit. Hands that shed innocent blood. I warn us all, God hates that. America has a price to pay as we head more and more in that direction. A holy God, who abominates these things, will bring justice to our door. We, I think, are moving from the right to die to the obligation to die to the license to kill those who won't get on with it. Frankly, for all of our professed abhorrence of violence in this nation, oh, we're hypocritical. I must point out that this country has always been violent from its inception, and it is growing more so. Once was that if you were in an altercation, there might be a fight. You shook hands and it was over. Today, the chances are excellent of getting shot if you get into it with somebody. We are a nation with feet that hasten to shed innocent blood. The obvious focus here is on physical violence. But we have no hesitation about doing violence to people's reputation and destroying their lives even while they live with our lying tongues. Now, here are some implications. Violence stirs the passions that beget violence, so that it is easier under extreme provocation for otherwise good people to cave into bloodlust, especially when justice is too slow or too lax or simply corrupt. Friends, let us remember this. God says, vengeance is mine, not yours. God says those who shed innocent blood are accountable as well as those who shed blood in hate. God tends to punish sin with its consequences. Violence, as I've indicated, leads to worse violence, and hate perpetuates itself with all of its fruits. Wisdom dictates that we are not to let ourselves get caught up in these cycles of violence. During my seminary days in Dallas, Texas, we attended the then 13,000-member First Baptist Church of Dallas, much, much larger today. Among its amenities, First B, as we called it, built a large recreation facilities over top of a 5-story parking garage. This space housed a large roller rink, a gym, and bowling lanes with automatic pin setters, believe it or not. My last 2 years in seminary, I worked there as a recreation supervisor. I monitored the use of the building, and I served the groups who were coming in. Some of the patrons on certain evenings, Mondays and Tuesdays, were really tough kids from the projects. They were brought in on buses by mission churches established by the mother church, First B. Some, at other times, were own church groups. The nights the project kids were in the building could be pretty tense. That's putting it mildly. Gang fights, knives, chains, attempted rape, and general vandalism. You had to always stay on top of the situation, and usually there were only one or two of us to do it. If you didn't, they'd get on top of you in no time. One evening, in fact, I almost got my killing done. All for just $1.25 an hour. 5 kids, ranging from about 13 to 15 in age, were torqued at me for making them toe the line. They lured me into the men's restroom where they proposed to do me violence. The irony was it seemed that everybody knew what was supposed to happen in there except me. I learned that later. When I walked into the restroom to see what they were up to, I knew they were up to something. There they were, all 5 of them, standing around the wash basins. Immediately they surrounded me with blades and threatened to cut me up. Now to this day I haven't seen 1 or even 5 kids of that age, without weapons, that would terrify me in the least. But frankly, a knife in the hand of a hostile of almost any age gets my attention, boy or girl. Frankly, God protected me and gave me, by instinct, a sense of the right way to handle the situation. I picked out the leader and mocked his manhood and challenged his courage. My idea was to shame them so they'd put away their weapons and be forced out of pride to take me on physically instead. Aren't you pathetic, I smirked. Here there's just 1 of me, guys. There's 5 of you. Good grief, 5-1. And you guys are still so gutless, you're still such cowards that you have to put knives between you and me? Then, looking at the boss of this crew of budding criminals, I said, Bud, you're really a tough guy, aren't you? Takes five guys and five knives for you to muster up a little courage. Boy, you're a fearsome dude, I gotta tell you. I bet without a knife you couldn't even scare a girl. Then, I have no idea what made me do this or why it worked, except the angels of God were with me. I just ordered disgustedly, "Come on, let's get out of here," and turned to walk away, not knowing what would happen when I turned my back, but I'd run out of options, since my Bruce Lee imitation wasn't up to the challenge. To my total amazement, they packed them in and followed like little lambs. When I opened the locker room doors, there in the gym there must have been 100 kids, it seemed, pressed around it trying to learn what they were doing to me. You should have seen their surprise when I walked out unscathed with those little animals following me with their tails between their legs. Now let me tell you how I got into that hostile situation in the first place. You see, I loved that job and I hated it. On the one hand, I enjoyed helping people have a good, wholesome recreation experience in a good, clean environment. I took pride in being a good host, keeping things up and running and making things safe and providing first aid when somebody got a scrape or a floor burn in a fall. And it was especially nice to have an opportunity to show kindness to these rough and underprivileged kids who had known so little of it. But there were always some who were so incorrigible and whom evil seemed early on to take its intractable hold. They couldn't appreciate or accept kindness or generosity. They were always scheming, conniving, concocting some evil, and taking advantage of and injuring people who reached out to them. They stole, they vandalized, destroyed, and flaunted every rule and boundary you established for the good of all, including their own welfare. I didn't hate these kids, but I hated that way about them. Not only did I take great offense to their ever-cheating, conniving, lawless, rule-bumping ways, but I took dead aim on them when I recognized that streak. Those kind usually stuck out like a sore thumb, and I aimed to nail them to the wall of accountability when they started their little games on my turf. Again, I remind you with this story that in the habits of man, who God created in His image and likeness, there are echoes of the ways of God. God loves us fallen sinners. He also loved the world, so loved it that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever trusts in Him might not perish, but have everlasting life. John 3:16. God is love. That is His moral being. God cares for you. He cares about the well-being of His creatures. He has revealed His law and established His providence as a certain social and moral order that conduces to the welfare of society and the containment of the evils that in our moral fallenness inflict so much pain and suffering and our waywardness from God and His law. In His goodness, He has let us know, as I always did when groups came in to use the facilities, what the rules and expectations are. Rules and expectations that were established for the good of all, to help us rein in our grosser tendencies and to check our self-serving ways. God has revealed to us some things to which He takes exceptional offense: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. That's what we're talking about presently. A heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among brethren. These things epitomize evil, and they create so much pain and suffering and disturbance in the order God established. So we would be wise to take note. Now, so far, we've looked intently at three sins, three moral outrages that God is on record as finding especially repugnant. Now, here is another. God loathes a heart that devises wicked plans. He loathes feet that run rapidly to evil, verse 18. Let's make a distinction. Some sin is just spontaneous combustion of the flesh. That doesn't excuse it. Nevertheless, we are morally and ethically tilted by our fallen nature in certain directions. We are predisposed to break out, some of us, in specific forms of vice and corruption. We become angrier, we get abusive, we get hurt, and we strike back. We return evil for evil. We run off at the mouth and talk out of school and cause somebody grief. We are about to get burned and we try to save our bacon with a lie. We see an opening and we cheat to gain advantage. We cave in to lust and we expose our eyes and minds to salacious or pornographic materials. We covet and we spend ourselves into ridiculous debt. We're lazy and irresponsible. All those things and 10,000 others are symptoms of human corruptions, outbursts of our carnal nature. But there is calculated compliance sin. If those things I just cataloged are evil, One stage is worse yet. What is morally perverse, what really takes the cake, is when our affinity and predilection for evil transcends our immoral and unethical reflex. It goes deeper than mere habit, but it's the product of a perverse premeditation and incubation. Some people sit on evil like a chicken sits on an egg, and they willfully hatch wicked schemes to take advantage of others and to inflict injury on them, and then cluck about their cleverness. This denunciation evokes memories, no doubt, of big-time crime, schemes and fraud, and high-level fraud, criminal conspiracies like the mafia, or greedy businessmen like some on Wall Street. We all remember many years back Bunker Hunt, who tried to manipulate the silver market and lost his fortune. Or we think of those guilty of stock manipulation, insider trading, savings and loan and bank scandals, Medicare and Medicaid fraud, telemarketing scams, home repair scams, and that's just the beginning of the list. However, the evil mindset that this text covers may hit much nearer home than may strike us at first blush. In fact, the holy indignation of God extends to anybody who takes perverse pride in clever schemes and connivances in the service of evil. The holy indignation of God extends to anybody who takes advantage of others with the intent of inflicting harm or hurt on people against whom they have a grudge or of whom they are jealous or envious. Communicatively, the risk I run here is that, again, we Christians may not recognize the extent to which we continue to carry over bad habits and toxicity from the old life, or the extent to which we've accommodated ourselves to the evil devices and designs that pass for acceptable business and professional practice in the world. There is great risk that we might take more pride in cleverness than integrity. In the world, things that are considered sharp or just good business may with God be considered a heart that devises wicked plans. That's what I'm trying to get across to us. Let me illustrate how endemic this perverse cleverness is by citing forms of it that unfortunately show up all too common among our Christian circles, show up in our personal lives and in our business lives and professional practices. Examples: failures to deliver promised services and or quality, misrepresentation of products or services that we might sell, making money financially off naive people when we know some product or service is against their best interest, or overbilling, or performing unneeded services, cheating the government, billing fraud, taxes, bilking employees, stealing from employers' time, money, equipment, and or supplies. We once, in a church we were in back in West Virginia, had a treasurer who was stealing from the church mission fund in order to send his daughter to a Bible college. Now, you go figure that one. Did you ever run an ad that you knew was deceptive or misleading? Did you ever misrepresent something as a sale that really wasn't discounted? Did you ever sell second-quality merchandise as first-quality? You ever cheat anybody on a service contract? Did you ever substitute used parts for new parts? Charge for billing new parts? Christians have been known to do such things. Ever bill for service not performed? Ever bill for an hour's service when you did 5 or 15 minutes worth of work and say, well, that's just the way business works? Ever sell something you knew people didn't need or make them a worse deal than you knew was available? Illegally beat the system and cheat it? We could go on and on. Ever get rid of loyal employees just to rid yourself of their pensions? Ever scheme to get rid of a rival? Ever plot and scheme to see how little work you could get away with and still keep your job? All of that comes under the heading of a heart that devises wicked plans. If you're an attorney, did you ever congratulate yourself on getting somebody off that you knew was guilty? Comes under the heading of a heart that devises wicked plans. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.